Hi, everybody. We have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and our subject today is the great Harold Lloyd, that masterful silent comedian and comedy producer. And with us are his granddaughter.
I was going to say producer of excellent grandchildren.
That's right. And keeper of the flame,
yep.
Suzanne Lloyd. Welcome back, Sue.
Thank you very much, Leonard and Jesse.
And yes. and with her is Rich Carell. Rich Carell, who's had an unbelievable career, really, as a child actor and then as a prolific director of television episodes, creator of Hannah Montana.
I've heard of that show. Was Harold Lloyd on Hannah Montana?
No.
Why hasn't anyone done that spinoff?
Yeah, that would have been a good one.
Hannah and Harold.
But Rich and Sue are lifelong friends. And at a certain point, and we'll get into this, Harold Lloyd tasked you with formidable challenge of preserving his films, protecting his vault of a life's work.
Mm. Yep.
So we're doing all this because this Sunday, if you're listening to our podcast on a prompt basis, this Sunday, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences at its Museum Theater is going to screen Safety Last. This is the film that even people who don't know anything about silent movies may know because of that image, that indelible image of Harold Lloyd dangling from the hands of a clock on the side of a building. And that's perhaps the most famous image of silent films altogether.
I mean, yeah, it's one of them.
But the film that surrounds that image is just as good as that moment in the movie. And the movie, astonishingly, is 100 years old, and it's still exciting, it's still hilarious, it's still thrilling. And so there's going to be 27 piece orchestra and on the giant screen
and real history at the museum,
right?
Living history at the museum.
So Sue, you brought this about. You are the keeper and the stoker of the flame, and I know it's become your passion.
This is a very a milestone in his legacy, 100 years, and there's so many wonderful people that have helped me keep Harold's image and his legacy and his films alive. Number one, Richard Carell. Richard Carell and another gentleman, Richard Symington. You, Leonard, for all the years of so many projects that Richard and I have been involved in with Harold, or I've done with Harold, you've always supported me, and I thank you very much for that. But I approached the Academy. I spoke to my dear friend, Bill Kramer, who is the chairman and president of the Academy. And he said, no, I agree with you, Sue. We have to honor Harold and Safety Last. Harold being a founding member of the Academy, number 6, and also him receiving an honorary award in 1950. It was presented to him in 53. He won it in 52. And for Harold Lloyd, Master Comedian, Good Citizen. But his films, today, there's a lot of a parallel between today. We're in the 20s. His films were shot in the 20s. He's a man of the city. He's a go-getter. He is an everyman. And he basically, his character was about a guy who got himself into a few of life's problems and troubles, but they were normal problems. I mean, he was always chasing the girl, but there was always some angle in it that he got tangled up in. And I think it's very true to today and the setup. And he was a city guy. He was in the jazz age. And his character portrayed that. He also was the father of romantic comedy, because there's no Harold Lloyd movie that does not get the girl in the end. Now I'm going to hand it over to Rich, I think, maybe.
Well, I think you put that really succinctly, Sue. But let's talk about Just Safety Last for a second. I love this movie. The picture was made in 1922 and released in 23. It's a great, great view of downtown Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Has a lot of cityscapes that are fantastic to see and watch and see how people were doing things. Has a lot of scenes on Broadway and, you know, running down through the middle of the city when it was really populated. So that's really a kind of really nice time capsule. And then in the midst of all of that is this guy, Harold Lloyd, who became kind of the everyman of screen characters in his day. So sitting right in the middle of the history of Los Angeles and basically the United States in 1922 is Harold Lloyd, who represents this guy in 1922, who's a go-getter, who wants to achieve, as Sue said, he wants to go out and get the girl, become successful in life. And people really responded to him that way. Not just that his films were funny, but that he was representative of so many people on the street and men, especially in the 20s. That's part of his appeal, is unlike Chaplin and Keaton, who were wonderful, but kind of strange characters. There was a tramp, there was the stone face. Lloyd was the guy on the street, and a lot of people really associated with that. And I think Safety Last is a really good representation of that. He's young, he's energetic, he's attractive. He's, you know, the girls like him, you know, the people like him at work. He's just a regular good guy, which is what Harold Lloyd was in real life too. So anyway, Safety Last is really a gem because it's kind of representative of all of that stuff. And it's really a film about Americana in 1923 too.
Right.
Well, this, right before we started recording, Sue knows this, obviously, she was there. I was telling Rich, my husband had never seen a Harold Lloyd film before. It's not his fault. He's a normal person who was not raised around film. We forgive him for that. The first time he got to see Harold was on the big screen at the TCM Film Festival. It was Safety Last, and we were sitting with Sue. The Alloy Orchestra was playing, and that's how he saw his very first Harold Lloyd film, was with an audience that was cracking up. Every joke hit. The Alloy Orchestra is wonderful. You know, they always do such a fantastic job. For me, it was so exciting because that's how he got to see him for the first time. You know, not on TV, not on a phone, but like that in the perfect setting. And what I always find is that his films don't age, and there's something about them that it's just perfect exactly as it is. And he has such a sweetness to him. Exactly. You're talking about the everyman. It's a lot of that, but there's also just in the way that as soon as you see him, you smile. That is the reaction you have to him. And I've been so lucky because you've done a lot of these events together. I've gotten to see so many of his films on a big screen with live accompaniment.
And they are audience proof.
100%.
I've never seen a film of his fizzle or fail. Mm. Every gag lands.
Always.
Every laugh he built in is still there. And that's what's astonishing. I shouldn't be astonished anymore because it's the sucker bet.
Yeah. Everyone's going to like this. Yeah.
And I've seen it with kids.
Yeah.
And kids are amazed that they can relate to a silent film.
Yeah.
But if anybody can bring them in into the tent, it's Harold. But he had an advantage. Well, not Chaplin and Keaton did the same thing. He previewed his films.
Yep.
To see where the laughs were and weren't. And then because he was his own producer, he could go back and reshoot if necessary and re-edit where it seemed to call upon that. Talk a little about that.
Big, well, they were really, really big into previewing stuff. And the thing is, Leonard, which was strange, was, you know, Lloyd started working in movies around 1912, 1913, and he was already doing Willie Work, which was the first character he ever played, by early 1914. And then after that, he got into Lonesome Luke, and then that became the Glasses character. But right from the beginning, to address your point, Roach and he were, Hal Roach, who produced these films, it was really, Harold Lloyd was the guy that kind of helped launch Roach as well, who we all know ended up doing Thelma Todd and Zazu Pitts and Laurel and Hardy and Our Gang and all those things. Roach and he were very, very savvy business guys about previewing films. They would even preview some one-reelers from time to time, and didn't have a lot of time to do that in particular, because they would try to crank those out like every 10, 12, 13 days. But they were always very interested in previewing stuff, because they wanted to know what the audiences would think. And that was something that they were kind of the pioneers of, really. Mm. And it was such a great method of learning. And as you say, because they produced their own films, and then Harold produced his own films as well. He went on as a solo producer. They had the power to go back and reshoot something that didn't quite work, or cut something that was too long, or add something. I mean, some of those guys, he would take his gag writers sometimes, his gag men, to previews. And those guys would sit up and think of things right in the preview, going, oh, here's what we should have done. And then they would go back and do it. So it was really interesting, and it was very novel. And it was, those were the pioneers, the guys that did all that.
Yeah. Well, it's, as I say, people think that so much is new, and the reality is very little is new. You know, they were smart. They wanted their audience to be happy, so they made sure the audience was going to be happy.
Well, when you say things like very little is new, you're absolutely right. That always reminds me of a funny story about him, about Harold. He was lecturing at the AFI, and we had run The Freshman. And some guy stood up and said, you know, Mr. Lloyd, this was like 1968. Said, Mr. Lloyd, you know, nowadays we're made to make message movies, so our movies have to have messages. So I liked your movie, but I didn't get the message. What was the message of The Freshman? And he said, the message was to make money.
Yeah, and, right?
Everybody busted up. It got a big laugh at some of the gags in the movie. But that's what, you know, these guys, it was business for them.
Yeah.
But they wanted to entertain people. Harold Lloyd was very, very interested in getting on a stage or in a film and entertaining people. Mm. And that takes pacing. Yep. It takes smarts. It takes knowing how to cut. It takes knowing how to shoot a gag, set up a gag, and then pay it off. So those guys are really good at that. But the point is, they were out to entertain people.
Yeah.
And the more they entertained them, the more it paid off. So obviously that worked. But that, I'll never forget that. That was a huge laugh at the AFI. Great.
It's funny, because it's exactly, we've had so many of these kinds of conversations about how people tend to put down popcorn movies, something fun. It's okay if a movie is just fun. That's okay. You're allowed to have both. You're allowed to have a movie that this is about the Holocaust and about the people, and it's emotional and taxing, all the rest. And then there's the movies that you just put on because you need something to make you smile. And to me, that is extremely valuable. If something can just make me laugh, make me smile on a daily basis, I can't ask for better than that. Right. And it's, you know, so that's perfect is what that is. That's perfect. Sue, do you remember the first one of his films you saw?
The first one of his films?
Yeah.
I think the first film I saw of his, he showed at the house for some of my little girlfriends. We must have been seven. Okay. And he showed My Worry with the Giant, which was the next film he made after Safety Last. And he made that with a new leading lady, because his leading lady in Safety Last was Mildred Davis, who he married at the end of Safety Last. And their first engagement out in public was going to the premiere of Safety Last is Harold Lloyd. So he showed me and my girlfriends from school. And it was, I don't know, about 10 of us. And we thought it was really funny. We loved The Giant and everything. But we could never... We'd look at him and we all called him Harry, or my girlfriends did, and which was like, we all gave him this nickname, but we couldn't figure out. He kept, you know, they were going, oh, it was a great movie. We're going, yes, and we love the guy, but we couldn't see the he was so much older because he was my grandfather and he looked like a man. It was a total switch. And then the next time I went to see a film, but that was a film in a theater with an audience, I saw a preview for World of Comedy. And that actually is where Richard first came across Harold Lloyd when he was young, a teenager. And this is 1962, 63. And this was for all the press. And they kept saying, and I was terrified. I never seen the clock scene from Safety Last. And my hands were sweating and I was kind of like, whoa, this guy's crazy. And they, you know, and I kept thinking to myself, is that really Dad? You know, I mean, yeah. It was like trying to come back to it, but I kept turning around and he was sitting two seats behind me and I'm going, well, I guess if he's sitting there and they said that there, I guess that guy's going to be okay. I mean, I still
made it,
you know, like, it was like, okay, okay. But it was such an impact. But it's so funny. I teach, I show children in the LA school district Harold's films. And the cutest thing is they're like sixth, seventh, and eighth graders. They love him. They talk to him on the screen. They relate completely to his character. But the other day, these two little seven-year-old boys said to me, well, we've all been talking after the film and, you know, and they were really into it. And I said, yes. And they said, well, we like what Harold texts us. We really like how he texts. And I thought for a second and I went, oh heavens, they're thinking the title cards that he's writing, title cards are texting him or the kids the story. It was amazing. And that's how they were taking it. But if you think about it, that's all the kids do now is they text. They don't even, they don't talk.
Yeah.
They text. So they think that Harold's texting them.
That's wild. It makes so much sense, but that's wild. How funny that that's how they would process it.
Gee.
That's how they processed it. And they thought he had cool text. And I went, okay. Because sometimes when you it's trying to explain Harold to young, you know, kids, sometimes they say he's Harry Potter's older brother. And that's another way in because they know Harry Potter so much.
Sure.
And I go, he's fast, he's quick, he gives a lot of magic like Harry does, and he wears a pair of glasses.
Same kind of glasses.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yes. Yep.
So isn't it amazing? It doesn't take much. I feel like people make a bigger fuss than they have to with kids in thinking, oh, they won't understand this, or they won't understand
kids
that.
Kids are smart.
The reality is they understand a hell of a lot. And all you have to do is tell, so if you just say it's black and white, okay, they're only going to react negatively if you encourage them to react negatively. They don't know.
No. And one thing is Harold in his films, he moves so quickly.
Yes.
And one comes after another. There's no real break. There's no long lead in. It's like, you know, he used to call it when he used to talk to Richard. He talked to Richard all the time about making films. I mean, he spoke to me a lot, but I mean, endlessly. And it was about the topper and how long to hold a gag and then move to another one or shorten a gag so you got more use out of it or more of a impact than keeping it on too long and extend. Right? I mean, this is, he had a formula to it. But he always said less was more. Richard, do you agree with me on this?
Yeah, you told me the key to good entertainment is brevity.
Oh, what a concept.
Yeah.
What a concept in a year when we're being besieged by 3-hour movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
But I must say, you know, you were talking, Jesse, completely about people and entertainment and Richard. You look at this, people have gone to see Oppenheimer, and then people have gone to see Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
Barbie is the craze. Mm-hmm. But the fun thing about Barbie is you go in there because you want to be entertained. You want to be taken out of today's, you know, worries and stress. But they're also wrapping around a party around it. So you've got people dressed up as Barbie,
yes.
having Barbie parties.
Yes.
The bars are dressed up, getting groups together to go see Barbie. They
yes.
make a complete event, which they used to make in the big theaters and the theater palaces. That's why those theater palaces were built, was yes. entertaining and to make it into an event that you look forward
right.
to. You look forward to buying the tickets. You were excited about going. You thought about what you were going to wear and where are we going to go have drinks before or dinner afterward. It was an all involvement that took people. It took them more than just sitting there watching the movie. It
yeah.
involved them for a number of days or weeks to get to that event. And I believe that a lot of Harold's films, people had that feeling about them. And I don't think those feelings about any of those films today has had such an impact as everybody going off for Barbie. And it's not a new concept. It's just been sitting in the corner for a long time and nobody looked at it.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, look, you have something like those, what they call shadow screenings with, for crying out loud, what's it called? The Time Warp. Rocky Horror Picture Show. You have something like that where everybody gets dressed up, they plan ahead, they buy tickets, they go to the theater, they want to sit there, they want to participate. And it's funny because you'd think that more filmmakers / marketing people would want that. You'd think that more of them would go, you know, if we say, hey, let's all go do this. Hey, let's all go do that. The last time I saw it with a current film was for the second Wakanda movie. People were coming in beautiful African garb and coming as families,
right.
you know, and it was like,
I just read today that Disney's releasing sing-along versions for theaters
yeah.
of Little Mermaid, Lion King.
Oh, yeah.
And that's audience participation.
100%. Grease does it. Grease yeah. has done it since it came out.
Right.
People go see Grease. They dress up, they sing.
Same with Sound of Music now.
Sound yeah, yes, yes. and Sound of Music.
The
yeah.
Bowl.
That's right.
West Side Story. Yeah, I mean, they were Pink Panther they did it with. But now there's an interesting catch. Like what I'm going to show with Safety Last on Sunday at the Academy Museum in the Geffen Theater, and this is at 2 p.m., tickets are quite tight now. I don't know. If you're interested in going, you might have to be in a standby line. I was told this morning. But
Harold would love to hear that, wouldn't he?
That's
yes.
right.
He would love to hear that.
So you better buy your ticket, Richard.
I've seen it, though.
Yeah, right.
Why? Why did you see it? But the funny thing is, live cinema with orchestras is really coming back.
Yes.
And I think they're seeing that if they're missing in the theaters as a run, that to bring it back in a different form as a different type of entertainment, it's a play, it's a movie, it's a musical concert.
It's a multimedia.
Yeah, mass media. Now, on the other hand, there are wonderful repertory houses like the New Beverly with that Quentin Tarantino
yep.
has and runs. Harold's going to be running there for 6 weekends in a row, starting the end of September.
That's oh, fantastic.
Yes. And we're going to show, I believe, 12 films on the weekends. So
and you have the Quentin seal of approval.
Yeah, right.
That's going to open things up to an even larger audience
yeah.
and a more right. diverse audience.
And they're all going to be 35mm prints.
Mm. Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
Now, so,
speaking of 35mm, Rich, how are you inducted into the world of film preservation?
Well, I mean, most of that was due to Harold Lloyd. When a friend of mine named David Knoll, we were fans of Harold, but when we first met him, we hadn't seen as much as we had wanted, of course, because most people hadn't seen a lot of his stuff. And we asked him to run a film for us. I loved the title, Welcome Danger. I love that title. And that happened to be his first talking picture. So we asked him if we could see it. And Sue mentioned Richard Simonton a little bit earlier in this podcast. They had a beautiful theater at their home in Toluca Lake. Harold could take 35mm down there and show it. And so he said, okay, boys, we can run that. So he took us down to these vaults. There were two walk-in vaults, like bank vaults. And then there was another place called the Cutting Room where they stored all this stuff. And he took us down to pick up the film. And we noticed, Dave and I noticed, that after he had finished his two compilations in 1961 and 1962, the gentleman who had done the editing on that, a guy named Duncan Mansfield, had been, he'd gotten sick and left, kind of left in a hurry. And we saw the negatives with the positives and the nitrate with the safety, and things were kind of in a bit of disarray. And we said to Harold, hey, we'll recatalog all this for you and put it all back together the right way if you want to. And he said, not only did he say, yeah, you can do it, but he said he'd pay us, which was like, we didn't expect that at all. But what happened with that, Leonard, was that we started to realize that some of the best material he had was the original material, which was nitrate. So we started researching nitrate, started talking to the Symington's, a guy named Gunther Young, who run a preservation place, Ralph Sargent, people like, we started talking to those guys, and they said, look, if the best stuff is nitrate and this stuff hasn't been like step contact printed, then you guys, the obligation you have to take care of this stuff is to really make sure that happens. So we went to Harold and we said, look, you know, yeah, you have some safety prints of things here and there, but the real preprint material needs to be saved. And can we do that for you? Can we be kind of like the watchdogs of that for you? And he said, sure, again, offering to pay us. So we set up accounts at CFI and Photocam and things like that. And we started, and we got with Richard Symington, who went out and got himself a step contact printer. We were dealing with shrunken film and registration problems and things like that, but we all became really good at that. I became this guy that knew how to run printers and 35 projectors and all this stuff. All of that was because of Harold Lloyd. And, you know, you get familiar with emulsions and, you know, A and B wind and talking films and sound negative and silent aperture and things like that. So we were kind of living that as on the job training. And that became more and more and more important to us. And so we really started to preserve the collection. And actually, before he died, the entire collection, including the one readers that he was in possession of, had all been restored and all been saved. And I think he felt great about that, because it gave him some assurance that his legacy in film would continue on. And I thought he was really grateful about it, but he was very sweet about it. I mean, you know, he was paying us and we were having fun. Listen, nothing's as good as being on a Sunday afternoon, sitting on a grape arbor outside in beautiful weather, opening up a film vault, taking a can off the shelf, you know, Girl Shy, Reel 5. And he would be sitting there with us. And he'd go, okay, boys, well, Girl Shy was the first independent movie I made. And here's what we did with, and here's what happened. And it was Harold Lloyd.
Yeah.
5 feet away from you when you're holding the negative of his movie. It's like, this was the luckiest thing that could have happened. And believe me, when I went on to do television work, and when I started really get into television, it was an associate producer for Gary Marshall. And in those days, associate producing was all post, everything from the music to the cutting to the dubbing to everything to get those shows on the air. I had already had so much background with film. Safety film, color film, negative, this, that. When I got to Paramount, they advanced me very quickly because I had this post-production background. I mean, I was ended up, you know, associate producer on Laverne and Shirley when it was the number two show in the country. It had nothing to do with me. I just was in the right place at the right time. But my background was due to Harold. It was because he allowed us to be hands-on, and we learned all that stuff. Wow. So we talked to the labs and talked to the printers and talked to the timers and everyone thought, well, this is great. And the other thing was, we had so much fun doing it. It was never work. It was all fun. It was like Leave It to Beaver. We were talking about that earlier, Leonard. Leave It to Beaver was, we got paid for having fun. Taking care of Harold's stuff was, we got paid for having fun. Mm. The house was great. He was great. Sue was great. We had a great time with our friends. It was just this welcoming place to be. And then getting involved in this preservation, it was an honor. It really was an honor to do it.
Well, we're all grateful to you for having taken on that job.
It was so grateful, but I was grateful because, and very lucky, because I was infatuated with the boys because I was 15. And Dad went, oh, this is a great idea. Sue was so infatuated with the boys. She's going to sit there with the boys and she's going to go to the lab with the boys. And the boys are going to make her do stuff in the film vault. So my job, and Richard can attest to this, I had to like take stuff and the goo off of some of the nitrate film, which really nice and smelly. And then my job was labeling the tin can, the real can.
Well, and you had great handwriting. You had better handwriting than the rest of us.
Yeah. So
we made you do the labeling.
I literally, there's still some cans up at the UCLA archives and the Packard vaults at holding all the Lloyd films that literally still have my handwriting on it with a Sharpie on the cans. And I swear I learned so much, and I learned so much by going with Richard and Dave and Richard Symington and going to all the labs. It was amazing. So people say, well, did I go to film school? No, I had hand-on training by a bunch of hoodlum guys who all became fans in film.
I thought that my dad's writing was the writing that came on all film cans. I didn't realize it was his writing. I just thought that that's what they looked like for a very long time. And then when I was about 11, my dad realized I had a skill. And what is that skill?
Smelling for vinegar.
I have the nose of a dog.
Oh, good.
And the second something is vinegary, I can find it. And so he would ask me whenever if I had a break over summer, or if I was just, finish my homework, go downstairs, start opening cans and figure out what was getting vinegary. What I discovered is you can do that for about an hour, then you pass out.
Yeah.
You know what's funny too, Jesse, is the vinegar syndrome, which really started to affect all the safety film.
Yeah.
In the days when we were doing this stuff, 66, 67, 68, 69, that syndrome hadn't shown up yet.
No, hadn't even
the labs, even all the labs were not familiar with that because it just didn't happen. And then later on it started to happen. But it's good. It's great that you mentioned that because when you think everything is safe, even with safety film, sometimes that didn't happen either. So, thank goodness now everything has been protected digitally.
Yeah.
If you hadn't done what you did when you did it, then there would have been a real risk.
Yeah.
A risk of losing some of Harold's movies, because nitrate film, for those who don't know, nitrate cellulose film stock is not only highly flammable, which can lead to disaster, but it also shrinks and warps and can...
And becomes goo.
Gelatinous goo.
It's horrible. Goo. Yes. And smell. It's like yellow jelly. And I remember down there, and I was young and, a girl, and I was like, I go upstairs to the house and I'd say, God, Dad, look at my nails. My manicure, they're horrible. And that stuff, that goo just goes in. He said, it's okay. Go back down there. Keep learning. it was like, okay, it doesn't matter. Keep going.
That's so funny. I can smell it absolutely anywhere. I know the vinegar when it's coming. You have that film cleaner.
Yeah.
I didn't realize film cleaner evaporates. You'd put a little bit onto one of the cloths to clean it, and then it was just gone. I was like, how? It's witchcraft.
You sound like you are involved in a lot of stuff that we were involved in, Jesse, because you were like taking care of your dad's films and other people's collections and stuff. I love that. I think that's all kind of, we all have that in common, don't we?
Look, I mean, I'm very lucky for a lot of reasons, but one of them is growing up with a projector in our house. And my dad showing me cartoons on the projector. It was my job to pull the screen down. I got to take the giant wooden hook thing and pull it down from the ceiling. And the key was to get it to the right point, not so far that it went flying back up again. And then you watch cartoons like that. And it feels like magic when you actually watch it, because it just doesn't, it to me, it's a bit like watching a record play. I understand that there's science that makes it work, but again, I say witchcraft. Like, how the hell does that thing make music? Yep. And so watching cartoons like that, and the music comes out, the image is there, everything. It's just, to me, it's just an incredible thing to watch. And it's part of what we're loving showing my daughter now, even though she's so little. She's fascinated by the projector. Who wouldn't be?
So you guys still run film.
Damn straight.
Love it. Love
Damn
it.
Damn straight we do.
Now, I unfortunately, in this context, was 3,000 miles away growing up in New Jersey. But when I was 11 years old, I went to the Fox Theater in Hackensack, New Jersey, next to my hometown of Teaneck, and saw Harold Lloyd's World of Comedy. Mm. First run on a double bill with Billy Budd. I was already in love with silent comedy from television and from the Robert Youngson compilation films, but I had not seen Harold Lloyd, and that film opened my eyes to him. And he was on The Tonight Show and The Steve Allen Show to promote it. They held him till the last segment. So I'm up at 1:45 in the morning on a Friday night waiting for Harold Lloyd. And it was always worth the wait, but I never got to meet him, unfortunately.
You know, it's funny, Leonard, it's, in 1961, I was over at a friend's house. It was the son of the director, Norman Foster, and the mm-hmm. actress, Sally Blaine. Mm-hmm. It was a Sunday afternoon, and we said to Norman Foster, you know, we were kids. We said, we'd really like to see something funny, a movie. And he said, I'll tell you what, you guys want to see something really funny, go see Harold Lloyd's World of Comedy. And we went, who's Harold Lloyd? And he said, well, you'll find out. Go see Harold Lloyd's World of Comedy. So Rob Foster and I took a bus from Beverly Hills down to the Vogue Theater in Hollywood and ran Harold Lloyd's World of Comedy. And they ran it. And we just thought it was so great. And I loved it. I went home. And that night at dinner, my sister said, you know, I'd really like to go see a funny movie. And I said, hey, I know this really funny movie called Harold Lloyd's World of Comedy. She said, yeah, but you've seen it. And I said, so I don't care. I'll go see it again. So she and I went down to see it. She loved it. Okay, so you fade out, and I meet Harold 5 years later. One of the first things I told him what my dad was. He was in business with my dad in 1940 when they started KMPC radio together, and they were friends from Palm Springs. So I was like, oh, yeah, I know your dad. I said, but Mr. Lloyd, I loved Harold Lloyd's World of Comedy. It's the only film in my life that I ever paid to see twice in the same day. And boy, did he love me after that. That was so great. And he just thought that was the greatest. And was very, very, very interested in what young people thought of this stuff. By the way, that's a true story. It is the only film I ever paid to see twice in one day. And up to this day, it's still the only film I ever paid to see twice in one day. So that was really funny. He loved it. But like you, I saw it first run. I saw it when it first came out. Mm-hmm. And that was really my first exposure to Harold Lloyd.
For a lot of people, I'm sure.
I must say that my grandfather, he was so grateful and so appreciative to Richard and Richard Symington and to Dave Knoll. But Richard, he used to say, you know, he's like my second son. Mm. And upon his, right before he passed in March of 71, he got out of his bed. He was really ill. And went down the hallway and went into this, he had a whole bank of closets, and pulled out his makeup case with his original glasses, his brushes, his makeup, his powders, his makeup mirror. And he got Rich and he said, come down the hall with me. And we all kind of, we went, you really want to get out of bed? And he went, no, I got something I want to do. And he gave Richard his makeup case.
Wow.
And that is now sitting at the Academy Museum.
Wow.
Thanks to Richard. And also thanks to, we saved his glove and his prosthetic hand that he had because of his accident.
Yeah, that was very sweet of him. That was really nice of him.
It was unbelievable because he couldn't figure out he was so appreciative. Richard used to travel on the road with him and go to universities and he'd speak. Richard went with us to London the last time he ever appeared in public, and we showed Kid Brother at the opening of the Roundhouse in the fall of 1970. And I just ran into a very wonderful writer and director and actor, Dick Clements, English. Well, Dick's going to be at our show on Sunday, and I had a lovely dinner with him the other night. And all of a sudden, he opened up and he said, I met Harold Lloyd, and I met Harold Lloyd at his last performance when he showed the Kid Brother. He said, everybody, it was a royal performance with Princess Margaret and Princess Alexandria, the Prime Minister, and Oh my gosh. I mean, the stars that came and went, I mean, Richard was with us. It was amazing. And he said, I have never seen a show like that to my day, to my life, of what it was like seeing a Harold Lloyd movie in that situation. And a lot of that was thanks to Kevin Brownlow.
But don't forget, Sue, don't forget about Terry Thomas and Peter Sellers. Yeah.
That was Peter Sellers and Maggie Smith.
Oh yeah.
And the Monty Python group. I mean, it was, and David Attenborough and Richard Attenborough.
But Leonard, you'll appreciate this. I went up to Terry Thomas, who I love. And I said to him, God, I really loved It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. And he went, yes, that was loud, wasn't it? And then the best thing that happened was I was standing next to Harold, Sue on one side, and I was standing right next to Harold. And Peter Sellers comes up, and David Brownlow says to Peter Sellers, Peter, I'd like you to meet Harold Lloyd. And he walks up to me and goes, my God, Harold, you look so good for your age. That was the best. That was perfect, Peter Sellers. Great, great.
Oh, man.
I think the first time I saw Harold was probably at UCLA mm-hmm. at one of those screenings with the orchestra, mm-hmm. which were always
Royce Hall.
Yeah,
yes.
Royce Hall, which were always yeah. so fantastic and so much fun. I loved every time you hosted one of those. It was mm-hmm. just, it was just a blast. As I said, I mean, that's the thing about having a live orchestra, whether it's a small one or a large one. It really does add to everything. And it's, again, it's an experience many people will never have. And as you say, I mean, that's what's so funny is people go to the Hollywood Bowl all the time to watch the movies with an orchestra. You can fill the bowl because people love getting that real experience, having that moment that feels like something more than just going to the movies. And it thrills me that you guys are doing this event because ahead, Sue.
Oh, no, we have to thank the composer the brilliant composer, Carl Davis, who just passed away too ago for the score for a number of Harold Lloyd movies.
I didn't know he passed away.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know he passed
away. 2 weeks ago.
Oh, God.
And we're going to do a tribute to him on Sunday.
Of course.
And his family is coming in. Part of his family lives here. Another part of his family, he lived in London. And they're all flying in. There's going to be about 30 Carl Davis relatives. And I'm doing a tribute to him. And dedicating the show. And
that's
incredible.
So much for silent films. But his ballets, his concerts, his combination of working with Paul McCartney on the Liverpool Oratorium. I mean, absolutely a brilliant man. And I learned so much from being with him and working with him I started working with him in about 1988. And I go on the road with him and show the films live, the Lloyd films. And his passion for it, but it was also his almost how he knew the films were produced and what they needed.
Yeah.
To bring them as music with a silent film. And Richard will attest to this. Dad used to always say, you have to have great music. Mm-hmm. You have to bring them alive. That's the second component of a silent film, is the music has to be right. He didn't like films being played just with a piano. If it wasn't Gaylord Carter and a great organist, you know, he wanted an orchestra. Mm-hmm. And when he brought back those two composites, World of Comedy and Funny Side of Life, he had a composer named Walter Scharf, who was a very famous film composer, come and score for those films. And he used the Berlin Philharmonic and the London Symphony Orchestra to score it. I mean, so on this event on Sunday and having the brilliant Carl Davis do scores, I feel like I've kind of completed a wish that he would have done himself, you know?
Yeah.
And Richard is the same way. And Richard and I have worked together on the, you know, as the films for a long, long, long time. But it's, I think he always felt that way about music. So
what a lot of people don't realize is when these films would originally premiere, especially the ones that would roadshow, they would travel with their own score. When we were, you know, kind of uncovering things at the Lloyd Estate and finding all these things that Harold had, we found scores for things like Girl Shy and, you know, Kid Brother. I mean, they were full scores. I mean, most people don't realize that that was part of the whole thing too, was seeing music. So, and then later, as time went by and, you know, the silent films weren't as popular and people didn't watch them as much and things like that, you started to see them with piano players and people just assumed, oh, well, this is what people heard, but it isn't. It was either, like Sue said, it was either like a four-rank Wurlitzer organ or some kind of film score being played live. Because again, as I said, we found stuff that was the studios, and sometimes Harold himself would pay to have these things scored and played live for people in the 20s, especially in the big movie houses.
Yeah.
So it's great. Major experience on Sunday is going to be great because it's just like it was 100 years ago.
Yeah. This may be a dumb question, Sue. Did Harold know Keaton and Chaplin and like Charlie Chase? Did they know each other at all?
They did. I mean, he was friends with Chaplin, and he, you know, it's funny. Chaplin's two young boys, Sidney and Charlie, used to come and play with my mother and my aunt up at the house all the time. And dad, it was funny. My mom said, you know, it's funny, the boys come over here and they always go, your dad's always so great. He comes down, he plays with us, he swims with us, he plays tennis with us, he'll take us and show us how to shoot a golf ball. And they said, you know, our dad is more recluse. He doesn't really come out and, you know, interconnect. And Keaton, oh, he went to a lot of different events with Keaton. And, you know, he was a good friend of Keaton's and he gave him a lot of advice. In fact, in the new James Curtis book, and that's written about and people have known about it, you know, dad said to him, and Keaton admitted, he said, you shouldn't do the deal with MGM. They're going to steal it from you and you shouldn't go and be, just don't do that with yourself. And when he went to MGM and years later, he said, I should have just listened to Harold. He was right. Yeah. And the funny thing is I was taken to meet Charlie Chaplin. Now, of course, if I was raised by my grandparents, and so they were like my mom and dad. And, you know, you don't really go up to your mom and dad's friends and say, well, what do you do? You know, you
right.
Who you are. I mean, you know, I was really dear friends with Frances Marion and she was Annie Fran. I didn't know what she was. I didn't know she was the first woman director and the great writer and won 2 Oscars. I mean, she was just Annie Fran was over. Okay. And they took me, I was in Switzerland with them. And they said, hey, for the day, we're going to go to another town and you're going to go and see some, you're going to play with some kids. And this gentleman, this guy, Mr. Chaplin, he has 8 kids and you'll be able to have a great time because I was an only child and I didn't have anybody with me and, or a sister or something, or a brother. The funny thing is I'm in the car and I said, oh, so what does he do? And my grandmother turned to me and she said, Oh, well, he's just in the same business as dad. And I went, okay, I don't know. What does he do? I mean, I don't, and never a clue. I met him at the door and I went off and played with the kids. I had a great day and said goodbye. And that was it. That was Charlie Chaplin, you know? It's like,
ignorance is bliss.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember what age that occurred to me, where I went, I should ask what people do who come over, because it was that kind of a thing where later on I went, I wish I knew that. I wish that I knew that you were someone important. I liked you.
I picked it up a little later when Cary Grant called the house.
That'll do it.
That really turned me a little bit. And then later on, I don't know, Richard, do you remember Colleen Moore and King Vidor being in London with us?
Yeah, and we also where did we visit? Didn't we visit Colleen Moore in Northern California or something?
When she and King had those ranches side by side in Palos, yeah. Paso Robles.
Yeah, and we were just sitting. She was having tea. I mean, we,
yeah, Yeah, we
talked to these people, and it was like fantastic. You know, it was like all these huge stars, and they were just regular people having tea and just having fun. You know? And they were interested in what we did and where we went to school and what we liked.
They were
the other way around, but
they were a wonderful couple. I remember Sterling Holloway; he was always at the house, and he started doing a story, did a voice, and all of a sudden, I said, "Sterl, I said, you sound like Winnie the Pooh. That's so funny." And he went, "I am Winnie the Pooh." I said, "No, you're not Winnie the Pooh." And he went, "I am Winnie the Pooh." And then he did some other voice. And I went, "Oh, what?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm an actor. I do this. This is what I do." And I said, "Oh, you can't do that." I mean, it was like, why? I mean, he's there. But it was fabulous, you know? They just, you kind of accept it as a child. I never noticed my grandfather's hand, that he was impaired on his right hand, until I was about, 6 years old. And I was just sitting with him, and he was editing his 3D slides, his photography slides. And I was sitting in his photo studio that we call the Chaos Room. And I was sitting there beside him because I was always hanging with him. And I looked down and I saw his hand, and I just went, "What happened to your hand?" I was totally, totally taken back. I ran to my grandmother. I started crying. I said, "Oh my God, you've got to see Dad's hand. It's horrible. I mean, and she's going, what's wrong?" And then he came running up, and she said, "What's going on? Did you hurt yourself?" And he said, "No, she just noticed my hand. I never noticed it before. Never. It totally went past me." You know,
we should explain for those who don't know that in 1919, Harold Lloyd was posing for some publicity photos. And as a gag, they had a prop bomb with a fuse. And you know, it's stunts, a stunt photo. And they lit the fuse, little dreaming that there was actually explosive in this prop bomb. And he held it up next to his face and then put it down. And had he not lowered his hand at that moment,
we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Right. But it did blind him and hospitalized him. And he was in very serious condition for quite some time, but recovered. But he lost his thumb
and his index finger,
right.
And a good portion, more than a quarter of his palm.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys, he was such an athlete, and he was also the perfect person to, when he suffered something like that, he was the perfect guy to overcome that in real life, which was exactly like what his character would do in the films, because the guy was a great tennis player. He's a great ping pong player. He was a great handball player, and he was a 300 bowler. He won the Herald Examiner bowling contest in Los Angeles 2 years in a row. Try bowling or playing tennis without a thumb and an index finger. So, and he did. That was his right hand that was damaged. He stayed right-handed. He signed all of his stuff right-handed. He wrote right-handed. He did all of his sports right-handed. And he just excelled. So the reason Sue probably never noticed this until she was 6 or 7.
There's nothing to notice.
Because there was nothing to notice. Because it just didn't hold him back at all. And it didn't do that in real life.
And he climbed the building and dangled from a clock.
Yeah, he did all but one of his thrill films. He called them the thrill pictures. He did all of them but one with his damaged hand. So for the majority,
wearing a prosthetic glove.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just a leather glove and that had a little bit of makeup on it, and it had an insert in it that added the index finger and the thumb, and the index finger on the glove was sewn to his middle finger so that he could still move his hand.
Mm.
Really, mm-hmm. aside from the fact that he had a stationary thumb, you didn't notice it.
Mm. Amazing.
And then later on in life, Wally Westmore came into his life, and he was over there, and Wally was at Paramount, and Wally was a very dear friend of his. And Wally came up with a prosthetic that was rubber and everything, and then he could take off his shirt. I mean, he didn't have to have a glove. he had a, it was like, you know, it was a fake, you know, part of his hand.
Yeah. The Westmores, by the way, if you are not familiar, the most famous makeup family, the greatest, most famous family of makeup probably ever so far.
And a large family.
There's a whole heap of them. There's a lot of Westmores.
Yep.
At one time. You walk around, you find a Westmore. There's like five or more of them. And they revolutionized a lot of this sort of stuff.
A lot of things. Well, it's such a treat to talk to both of you and to hear your experiences and your recollections. We feel really privileged to know you both and to share you now with our listeners on the podcast.
That's the way we feel about you, Leonard.
Yes, exactly. We can't thank you enough and everything from all your support through all the years.
Hey, thank you for saying all that. And I care about you guys. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for taking some time this morning.
Thank you.
Happy to do it.
Thank you so much.